Good morning. Can you hear me? All right. Indeed, we have been, since the beginning of September, our sermon series has been on the theme of the fruit of the Spirit. And as we listen to the various speakers expound on the various qualities of the fruit of the Spirit, I reckon that all of us will in an increasing way realize that the fruit of the Spirit is in fact practical, can be applied to every aspect of Christian life. For instance, 2 weeks ago when Mark McCreary preached on faithfulness and kindness, you realize and notice that he weaved the mission aspect of Christian life into his sermon. And of course, a very obvious area that all of us can apply the fruit of Spirit is fellowship. And if I can just sum up in a very simplistic way, we can say that fellowship should reflect, Christian fellowship should reflect the Godward qualities of love, joy, peace by demonstrating the outward qualities of patience, kindness, and goodness with having the inward qualities of faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And if I were to preach on that subject this morning, perhaps I could give a title like Fruit of the Spirit Flavored Fellowship, or just simply Fruitful Fellowship, or more fanciful, Truthy Fruity Fellowship. But never will I have to resort to a topic like Fruit of the Spirit and the F word. And hold on a minute. Now, in Christian vocabulary, F word is not an ugly four-letter word, but a 10-letter beautiful word, fellowship. This morning, my topic is the fruit of the Spirit and the P word. Persecution is an 11-letter word longer than fellowship, at least so because persecution normally involves long-suffering. Generally, Christians do not like to talk about the subject, and many churches avoid preaching on the subject. Earlier on this year, in February, when we were on the subject of discipleship, I preached on the topic, the call of discipleship is the call of the cross, emphasizing that the message of the cross is in fact the cross of the message. And I received various feedback from people, some channeled, one through my wife, one channeled to my son. But this particular one came directly to me on WhatsApp, and I read, quote, "Just wanted to thank you for your sermon last Sunday. It was a tough one to digest, since no one liked to hear about martyrdom. But all the more, we need to be speaking about this. Thank you, you know who you are, sister. Thank you for your encouragement. And this morning, I'd like to continue where I left off in that sermon. As part of the conclusion, I mentioned that martyrdom is not feared if we are liberated from the fear of death. But this morning, my subject is not martyrdom. In fact, someone said it's more difficult to live for Jesus every day, especially under difficult and even oppressive situations, than to lie for Jesus once. It's more difficult to live for Jesus every day than to die for Jesus just once. So today's subject is about living for Jesus under trying and even oppressive situations. Generally speaking, Christians' reluctance to talk about persecution stems from a lack of understanding of persecution. Some limit the experience of persecution to only those eschatological events with the view that it only happen in future as imminent signposts of Christ's second coming. Others restrict persecution to only those violent acts that may result in martyrdom. This morning, I'd like to give a face to persecution so that we can face persecution in its different phases. And you can see the alphabets, F and P all there. And before I go on, I just like all of us to read two verses from the Bible. The first one will give an overall perspective of persecution, and the second one, an overall response, our attitude towards persecution. Let's all read it together from Timothy on a count of three. 1, 2, 3. Indeed, all who desire to live godly lives in Christ will be persecuted. Second verse. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's suffering, that we may also rejoice and be glad when His glory is revealed. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Father God, we pray that as we read and consider your word this morning, may we not shrink in fear, but rather surge in faith in our daily walk with you. Charles Stenson, the author of Reexamining Religious Persecution, Constructing a Framework for Understanding Persecution, offers a general definition of persecution. It reads, any unjust action of mild or intense level of hostility directed at Christians of varying levels of commitment, resulting in varying levels of harm, which may or may not necessarily prevent or limit those Christians' ability to practice their faith or appropriately propagate their faith as it is considered from the victim's perspective. Each motivation having religion, namely the identification of its victim as Christian, as its primary motivation. But Charles Tenzin was quick to qualify that this general definition of persecution must be based on a New Testament theological expectation whereby Christians can anticipate persecution as part of Christian living. Now let's look at the biblical perspective of persecution. In the book, Standing Strong in the Storm, and I like the song just now, they choose Cornerstone Storm, He's Still Lord of All. In this book, Standing Strong Through the Storm, the authors Paul Estabrook and Jim Cunningham look at the perspective of persecution using the acronym H-E-I-R, AIR. And H-E-I-R. So, just a minute. Before that, a quick diversion and also an apt reminder that we are all heirs of God. Galatians chapter 4, verse 7 says, so we are no longer slave, but a son. And if a son, then heir through God. Romans 8:17 says, if children, then heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we may be glorified with him. And Martin Luther King was the one who mentioned that Christianity has always insisted the cross we bear precedes the crown we wear. From the verses we read earlier on, the two verses, we know that when Christians live in a godless society, base their faith and practice on the Bible, they will certainly face and endure persecution. As we hear and read of reports around the world, such as in China, Russia, North Korea, Pakistan, nearer here, Indonesia, and even in our own country. What do you make of it? What do you mean by persecution? Jesus describes the word to us in Luke chapter 6, verse 22, using four verbs. Blessed are you when they hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Hate you. John's Gospel says, Jesus said this in John's Gospel, if the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you. Exclude you. In the Gospel of John also, it says, for already the Jews had decided that anyone who acknowledged Jesus as the Christ will be put out of the synagogue, be excluded from the worshiping community. Insult you. In Mark's Gospel, it says, those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, so, if you are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, come down and save yourself. First Peter says, if you are insulted because of the name of Christ, you are blessed, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. Reject you. First Peter chapter 2, verse 4 says, as you come to him, a living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God, chosen and precious. So the honor for those who believe, but for those who don't believe, the stone that the builder rejected has become the cornerstone. And the song that we sang just now reminds us, cornerstone. The four verbs that we described just now can be experienced in varying degrees of intensity. We tend to think of persecution only in a very intense form. But when you experience hatred, exclusion, insult, and rejection, because you are the follower of Jesus, even if it's in a milder form, less intense, you are also facing persecution and therefore an heir of God. In the Gospel of Matthew, when Jesus warns and prepares the disciples to face persecution, he described persecution in more graphic detail. Also in Paul described his experience in 2 Corinthians, and in Hebrews as well, it described some form of persecution. So from these few verses, as you look out in your own Bible and see, you can see that beating, court trial, confiscation, denigration, death, detention, discrimination, exclusion, floggings, hardship, hatred, harassment, humiliation, interrogation, insult, imprisonment, jail, marginalization, mockery, ostracism, ridicule, rejection, stoning, torture, both emotional and physical, and so on. From all this description, we can classify persecution into four major categories. First one, and this is in the acronym ODIM, and it goes along with the in sequence of the air just now, opposition, right? They hate us for what we believe, attack our faith. The purpose of enemy is to shut us down. The goal is to deny our vision and our hope. Disinformation and discrimination. To exclude us for what we say, attack on the Bible, purpose is to shut us up, the goal is to discourage our witness. You know, the word Eloh, from which we get Elohim, the prefix I-M is an honorific title of God. Eloh is God. You know, how great is our God? In Hebrew sounds like that. Gadol Elohai. Okay, how great is our God? The word Eloh has been translated from long ago from Arabic language, Middle Eastern, to Allah. But in this part of the world, the A word is prohibited for some Christian. And the song that we know about, most churches have changed the word. Ku sembah kau, ya Tuhanku. That was not the original composer's word. Okay? So the A word is more than just a word. Injustice. insult us for what we do, attack us. Our action on evangelism purpose is to shut us out. Goal is to defeat our deeds of compassion, of love, and witness on evangelism. I think 2 weeks ago, if you read the Star paper, some Christians in Penang were out distributing Bible to school children, and somehow they were detained by police. And in China too, recently we read in September, the church, the government outlawed the big Protestant underground church. The Zion Church in Beijing was closed down by the Beijing Jiaoyang District authorities. Also, injustice, insult us for what we do, attack our evangelism. And in Russia too, now there's a draconian law that says that if you read Bible, even in your home, in front of a non-believing relative, it's also against the law. If you're on a train journeying from one city to another and you are found witnessing Christ to another person, is also an offense in Russia. Mistreatment. Reject us for what we are. Attack on the church. Purpose is to shut us off. The goal is to destroy our being and our influence. And also, again, the example of China in January, a really big, huge mega church was totally demolished to the ground by the government. And also in our own country, we hear also of a couple of years back, churches were petrol bombed and crosses were removed and all that. So the verses we read in 1 Peter shows us the response, generally speaking. But how can we respond to persecution in difficult times? One way is to prepare ourselves by using the fruit of the Spirit as in our attitude. In Mark and Matthew Gospel, Jesus says, "I say to you, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you." Joy. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. James says, "Count it all joy, my brethren, when you meet trials of various kinds." Peter also says, "In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have grieved, you are being grieved by various trials, more precious than gold that perishes, though it's tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and known at the revelation of Jesus Christ." And just now the verse we read as well, "But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's suffering, that you may also rejoice and be glad when the glory is revealed." And of course, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus reminds us, "Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets before you." So it was nothing new. Peace. In John Gospel, Jesus said to the disciples, "I say again, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so send I you. Go your way. Behold, I'm sending you out as lambs in the midst of wolves. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let your hearts not be troubled, neither let them be afraid." Patience. In James says, "As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord." Romans 12:12. "Rejoice in hope, Be patient in tribulation. Be consistent in prayer. Kindness. Romans 12:20. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. For in so doing, you'll heap burning coal upon his head. Goodness. Romans 12:21. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Luke 22 says, but I say to you who hears, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Faithfulness. Revelation 2:10. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. The cross we bear will precede the crown we wear. Gentleness, 2 Timothy. And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. And the context of this verse is Paul was writing his final letter to Timothy, and in fact, his final of all his epistles. He was in prison awaiting execution. And that's the context of his writing that, penning that encouragement. Gentleness. I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling of which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience. Self-control. Paul, in the same letter, encourages Timothy, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power, of love, and self-control. 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 5 to 6 says, for this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control. Reverend Dr. L. Vergula, president of the Baptist Seminary in Havana, Cuba, spent 5 years in Castro's prison in the 1960s. He got this to say, we learn not to fear, not to hate, not to harm. Not to fear, in fearing that we develop boldness and courage. Not to hate implies focusing on love, forgiveness, and grace. And not to harm indicates commitment to biblical principle of nonviolence and aggressive love and self-control. And we know that the fruit of spirit, in fact, can help us prepare ourselves as we face various forms of persecution. And from the many verses, I'm sorry about that because it's a topical sermon, so a lot of cross-references. But from all the various verses, right, we can summarize into three main thoughts. Number one, persecution is a normal rather than an abnormal part of Christian life. It's a normal rather than abnormal part of Christian life. The suffering of Christ emanates logically and inevitably from the epicenter of his life and message. Jesus used his word and his work, which led him to suffering, which consequently forms the inseparable part of his message and his ministry. So Christians share Christ's suffering as we carry Jesus' life, his mission, and his message. Hence, rather than viewing persecution as an anomaly, a disaster, a tragedy, or misfortune, it is considered a logical consequence of following Christ. And just now we quoted a lot of national examples, but on individual basis as well, we can come across all the various categories of persecution. Recently, I heard of a testimony of a Christian professional, a brother, working in Singapore, and the boss sort of asked him to do what he calls some creative accounting. To him, as a Christian, he feels that it's wrong, it's a form of cheating, and he refused to do it. And he was eventually asked to leave the company. So for standing up for his belief and his practice, he got the sack. But of course, later on, I heard that God bless him with a better and better paying job in KL. Have you heard of an office secretary who refused to partake in gossips, juicy gossips in the office? And this secretary, being a Christian and believed that gossip is wrong, she would normally try to as quickly as possible leave the company of those girls, gossiping. And after a little while, people realized, every time we talk about juicy news, this lady, Christian lady, always walk away from us. Eventually, she was excluded from the lunch group. This, you might think, is very mild, but because for staying strong on your faith and belief that, gossip is wrong, you suffer some kind of thing, you are no more included in the lunch group. And for youths, when I was younger in my school days, one time there was a preacher who was very strong and preached on against eating food offered to idols. Somehow that sermon convicted this friend of mine very strongly. And because his family is ancestral worshippers, and every day there will be certain best part of the food offered to idols. And because I don't want to talk about food offered to idols, topic as such, but this was an experience, and he went back and then he started avoiding eating the food and all that. So the family noticed that and became very angry and even come to talk about, disowning, because this is our ancestor, we have been for ages, and you don't part of it. And in that sense, of course, later on, church leaders have to go and explain to the family members. Eventually, somehow, it ended quite well. But initially, it was not like that. And I also have friends who were not allowed to be baptized in the youth when they wanted to be baptized, and until they grew older and adulthood. Sometimes, youth, I know some of youth here do not come from Christian families. You might have some problems in that area, but I'm so glad I heard the Boys Brigade, I think 8 of them, attending baptism classes, preparing for baptism. I praise God for that. But there are some youths who would not be allowed to do that in Christian environment. In a non-Christian environment, the parents would not allow. And sometimes youths, because of your commitment to church, I know in my youth days also, you come home, the father were angry, grounded straight away. When the friend came home from church, happy about youth meeting, but because, the father haven't seen him for that day, just grounded him. So sometimes youth also, you might face some difficulty at home of such situation. But that doesn't mean you give up your faith. You might have to stop coming to church for a while, but your faith doesn't lose out yet. You still stay strong until, things simmer down. Okay, the second point. My first point was that persecution is to be viewed as a normal rather than abnormal part of Christian life. Secondly, persecution of Christians is universal and ever-present. Brother Andrew, the founder of Open Doors, when he went to travel to many countries to talk about the persecuted church, and sometimes he arrived at a certain country to tell the church leaders to pray for another country. The reaction initially would be, it will never happen here. And a couple of years later, when he goes back to the same country, the same leaders tell him, we thought it will never happen here, but it happened in the end. Based on the definition of religious persecution earlier, we should expect persecution of Christians in various forms and degrees everywhere, including in our own country. Thirdly, persecution is an instrument of perfection. Suffering is an instrument designed by God for building the character of His children and building the character of His church. And earlier on, I said that I had some feedback from during my last sermon, and this is another brother sent me this. He said, "Thanks for your message, brother. Sometimes I think persecution will not be a bad thing for Malaysia church," unquote. Sometimes God uses persecution to strengthen the church, not to destroy it. In Hebrews chapter 2, verse 10, it says, "For it is fitting that he, for where and by whom at all things exist in bringing many sons to glory, should make the founder of their salvation perfect through suffering." Right? God made Jesus perfect through suffering in that sense. So Apostle Paul also encouraged the diaspora Christians facing persecution. "In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the testing of your faith, now more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor of the revelation of Jesus Christ." Persecution, the church worldwide have seen before. When Mao Zedong kicked out all the missionaries and prevented all forms of religious activity, the Chinese church in China grew the fastest during that time. God is still doing His work, even in times of persecution, that the church grow stronger instead of weaker. As we conclude, we ask ourselves this question: are we walking the way of the cross? The challenge of the church is to learn and to teach more things about Jesus, which we can incorporate in our lives. The two verses we read at the beginning encourage us that if we desire godly lives, to live godly lives, we should not be surprised at all if things come our way, trials come our way. In fact, the question we should ask next is, are we in trouble for Jesus? William Barclay, the great British biblical scholar, famously described a New Testament Christian in this way. Christians at that time were having three characteristics, the New Testament Christian. Number one, they were absolutely happy. Number two, they were filled with irrational love for everyone. Number three, they were always in trouble. Brother Andrew put it this way: persecution is because of the radical life we live, not the other way around. In our Christian testimony, is our Christian testimony defined by our influence on the life of others or by the affluence we display? So today, the P word is not prosperity. You know that. One more question we need to ask ourselves: do we see God as big enough? Yeah, just now we heard the song also, "God is Able." Do we see our God as big enough? When we hear and read of stories of persecuted Christians testify of how God delivered them and strengthened them, our faith gets a boost. The testimonies tend to come in two major forms. Number one, the first type is testimonies of God's rescuing power to deliver people out of certain situations. And the testimonies of endurance of story that testify of God's faithfulness during those times. A Christian in China once remarked, "Remember, for every deliverance story you hear, there are 10 endurance stories you might not hear." We should come alongside those who are enduring. Hebrews 13, verse 3 says, "Remember those who are in prison, as though in prison with them, and those who are mistreated, since you are also in the body." So we should continue to pray for people like Pastor Raymond Goh, whose disappearance is still not accounted for, and the family is still in agony because of the non-closure in one form or another. We should uphold them in prayer. Paul, Apostle Paul, in that letter that I mentioned just now, 2 Timothy, from which we read a couple of verses already, he laments to Timothy in verse 15. "You are aware that all who are in Asia turn away from me. Among them are Phygellus and Hermogenes, because these people disassociated themselves from Paul for fear of persecution." But Paul was quick to rejoice in the following verse: "May the Lord grant mercy to the household of Onesiphorus, for he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. But when he arrived in Rome, he searched for me earnestly and found me." So are we like people like Phygellus and Hermogenes, who dissociate with Christians or even dissociate with the name of Christ when come to difficult times? Or are we like Onesiphorus, who look out for Paul, for those who are suffering, and refresh him and provide for him and pray for him and strengthen him? With your permission, I'd like to play a 2-minute video. Stanford, can you just play this short video clip?